Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Looks like my guest, Scott Mowry, is not going to show this evening, and so that gives me an opportunity to talk about my favorite subject in all of the alternative media, and that's the knowledge, the wisdom, the experiences of a man named Edward Albert Meyer, who lives in Switzerland. He's 80 years old now. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidruti. It's in northern Switzerland, about 52 minutes east of Zurich, in a beautiful wooded area. He has a building there. It's called the Semyase Silver Star Center, and it's a place where his organization meets, the group called FIGU. FIGU is in charge of many things, including translating Billy's writings into English as well as other languages. Billy's written about 40 books. I've got a few sitting on my desk right now. The Might of Thoughts is one. The Way to Live is another. And The Psyche is an additional one. You can download for free The Goblet of Truth. And I always tell people, if you Google Billy Meyer Wiki, or Billy Meyer for that matter, you can go to the Billy Meyer Wiki and see many, many of the contacts. Billy is very unusual in terms of his knowledge and his experiences. Most of the contactees in the UFO world have had a contact or two, and they will write a book about it. One that comes to mind off the top of my head would be George Adamski, although he had more than a couple, and another one might be Miriam Delicato. And but here with Billy Meyer, we've had literally a lifetime of contacts, over 2,000 mentioned in his contact reports. And he's been given wisdom. I think it's the most important wisdom on the planet. It answers all the big questions in life. Who are we? Where do we come from? What's the purpose for our existence? And what do the other human civilizations in our galaxy, what are their evolutionary steps? And how are they related to us, and all these very important things about our history we've learned about the life that was in our solar system, for example, on the planet Mars and on the planet Melona before it was destroyed, and how human history on the Earth goes back millions of years, and that we've had civilizations on the Earth for hundreds of thousands of years, and civilizations that came from the stars, and it ended badly for all these civilizations, and they quite nearly destroyed the planet. So here we are in 2017, and very possibly are in the process of degenerating again as a civilization and destroying ourselves. And this one man in Switzerland is doing what he's been doing for the past 13,000 years and even longer. But on this earth, according to his extraterrestrial contact, Thoth, his same spirit has been on the earth as the people today who we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each of these lifetimes, he taught a very ancient and universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. And the teaching of the spirit has many terms within it. And I've taken some time to define some of these terms. I thought it would be interesting to go over these at some time in the near future, and we've got an opportunity to do that today. The first German term I want to talk about is called Schöpfung, and that is the German word for creation. Now, creation is identical to the idea of a universal consciousness. The creation is this universe's internal and external body. The universe that we live in is the material manifestation of this universal consciousness. And our universal consciousness is actually young in terms of universal consciousnesses. And there are many, many different universes. We have a parallel universe called the Tao universe. And Billy's second contact, a woman named Asket, is from the Tao universe. It's an adjacent universe to ours, and her people, the Timmers, who are descended from the Lyrians, the people from Lyra Vega, moved into this parallel universe thousands of years ago. They developed a technology to move between universes. So 46 trillion years ago, when our creation came into existence, our universe, the Tao universe, did as well. Everything which exists in our universe is the manifestation of the might and the infinite true love of the universal consciousness of our universe. And the physical universe, the physical aspect of our universe, exists in what's called the material belt, which is the fourth of seven belts. Every universe, every creation has seven layers or belts that counter-rotate around each other. And the fourth belt is where all the galaxies are, where all the planets are, where all the stars are. Creation has an infinite and effective love. And there's a difference between affective love and effective love. Effective love is based on respect, wisdom, and observation. In fact, the universal intelligence, it expresses this wisdom through the beauty of nature. So the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. The love of creation is, love is the highest principle in all creation. And everything follows that principle in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And only humanity can stray from love because we have truly a free will. There are something called creational natural laws. And some of these laws include, as I've been speaking about, the law of love. And the law of love refers to the highest form of love. This is also called affective love. It's not a romantic love. Romantic love is also known in the Meyer case as false love. The second creational natural law is the law of striving. And this is the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. Striving is critical if you want to be a happy person. This is one of the great secrets of life is staying hard at work. It doesn't mean you have to exhaust yourself or make yourself miserable. But continuing to strive is making good use of your time. And let me read a little bit about striving. And this comes from Billy's book, The Way to Live, Die Art zu Leben. And it says, every single life form and every single understanding human being recognizes that striving itself must be striven for. That striving requires an expenditure of effort and must be achieved through hard work. that striving is not simply dropped into one's lap, and that again and again there are circumstances which work against the striving. Therefore, one's striving cannot be constantly and really gratified, because there are multifarious powers which work against the striving. However, this is not abnormal. Rather, it is truthfully in accord with the natural law, because were there no resistance, there is no effort for the progress. Therefore, it has to be in accord with natural law, then an opposite pole is positioned against the striving. Based on the teaching of the creational law that there must be always two poles, a plus and a minus, a pro and a con, a negative and a positive. Together, the two poles always produce one, a oneness and equalizedness. And this points at the third creational natural law called the law of harmony. And the law of harmony says the bipolar structure / composition of everything exists, the positive and the negative. So in terms of our living, in terms of our life, in the law of harmony, we want to be neutral positive in our thinking process, and we want to continually evaluate ourselves and make sure that we stay within that neutral positive framework, because then we're living according to the creational natural law of harmony. Another creational natural law is the law of reincarnation. And that means that your spiritual consciousness is going to come back as a different personality. And you're going to have to grow up again, and you're going to go through this process again of life and death. And the next time around, you'll have a little bit more advantage, because stored in your spirit form, which is called the Geist form, is the memories of your previous life, the wisdom that you gained, and your spirit form, which is your spiritual consciousness. Spirit form resides in the middle of the brain in an area called the superior colliculus. And the spirit form is the part of us that never dies. It remains after death. The spirit is a minor part piece, a minute part piece of the creation. It animates the physical body. It causes the heart to beat. The spirit comes into the body of the fetus at 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. The spirit is no larger than a needle point. Its energy is enormous, and it spreads out evenly like a web over all parts of the human body, inside and out. The spirit energy stays in the body about 3 hours after death. So the spirit energy stays for about 3 hours in the remains of a body after the spirit, and thereby the central spirit energy, has left the body. That's why some parts still can be used in organ donation. The spirit energy that stays behind in the body could be referred to as the residual spirit energy, and it will be absorbed by nature in the course of about 3 hours. Now, Billy's third contact, a woman named Semyase, had some very interesting things to say about the human spirit in Contact Report 10. Contact Report 10 occurred on March 26, 1975 at about 3:20 p.m. Semyase at that time was 344 years old. She was about 5'5", tall, slender. She was a young, pretty woman with fair skin, sparkling blue eyes, light blonde hair. On December 15, 1977, she suffered a life-threatening accident in the Semyase Silver Star Center in Hinterschmidt-Ruti, when one of the other group members stepped into the room where Billy and Semyase were speaking. Semyase fell down. She hit her head on the table. She was kind of teleported back to her ship, where she was later found, and then she had to be taken to her home planet of Ira for medical treatment and rehabilitation. February 3rd, 1984, the very last contact took place between Semyase and Billy. Semyase suffered a cerebral collapse in 1984 and was transported again as quickly as possible to the Tao universe. She was healed by the help of Asket and her friends, the Sonear. These are ETs from the Tao universe that don't require any ships to travel through space and time. But in any sense, back in 1975, Billy and Semyase had a very profound discussion. Contact Report 10 is kind of the basis for a lot of the spiritual teachings. Semyase said to Billy, "The human bears a spirit that does not die nor sleep. During the deepest sleep, it records all thoughts and motions. It informs the human whether his thoughts are correct or false, if he has learned to pay attention. The spirit that we have, it resides in an area called the superior colliculus. And the spirit is a creation of the universal consciousness. The human spirit, the Geist form, helps the universal consciousness to evolve. The superior colliculus is the area of the brain that deals with the movement of the eyes. It's the visual reflex center that allows us to move our eyes from one target to another. The superior colliculus comes into play when you are reading. These are called saccadic eye movements, when you're shifting from one thing to another. The superior colliculus, again, is where the spirit form of every human being exists. Also, the superior colliculus has led to studies of multisensory integration that occurs in the superior colliculus. Contact Report 10 is a very important contact report. I'll read it just a little bit more for you, and then I'll get back on topic with my terms here. It says, "A human's yearning lies in the joy that remains for the imperishable life, the permanent peace, the spiritual and consciousness-related wealth that never fades and lasts forever. Heaven and earth will perish, but truth, knowledge, wisdom, and spirit will never be changing or perish. The spirit and the consciousness are on the lookout for what is perfect, for harmony, for peace, cognition, realization, for wisdom, knowledge, truth, and beauty, for love, and for the true being, all of which are of absolute duration. All of these lead to what forms the spiritual kingdom of wisdom. All are existing within what is creative." So that's called the Geist form. That's the human spirit. There's something, the central part of that human spirit, there's something called the Gemut. The Gemut controls the thoughts and the feelings associated with the spiritual consciousness. The Gemut is the spiritual counterpart of what's called the psyche. The Gemut is our connection with the universal consciousness. It controls the thoughts and the feelings that your spiritual consciousness has. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. So we all have a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. Your material consciousness is associated with the current lifetime. The spirit is associated with all lifetimes. So when you die, the spirit leaves the body, the material consciousness comes with the spirit. The material consciousness then is processed in the spirit realm, and all your important information that you've learned is turned into its essence for example, you all the wisdom, the love, the logic, the discernment that you gain from that last life will be stored in your spirit form between lives, and it will strengthen your spirit form and make it wiser. So when you come back in again as a child, that child will get more assistance by its spirit form during that lifetime, more impulsation, more signals that will help it with its next life. There's something called the M-finding. The M-finding is referred to as that block or factor which occupies an important position in the spiritual realm, in the gamut, as does the feeling in the half-material psyche. So let's back up a little bit. We've got the spirit form, and within that we have the gamut, which controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. And then we have the Empfinden, which is related to the spirit. Now, the Empfinden, again, is referred to as a block or a factor which occupies an important position in the spiritual realm and the gamut, as does the feeling in the half-material psyche. So, we have a block, an area in our psyche called the feeling. There are about six German terms related to that word. And then there's, in the spirit form, there's something called the Empfinden. And the Empfinden is a spiritual process of the gamut, which does, again, the gamut does not belong to the physical body. The Empfinden only receives from these swinging waves, which are purely spiritual in nature. So you've probably months ago, I've talked about the swinging wave. There are these partially material, I'm trying to find it here in one of these books. The swinging wave, swinging is a noun. The electromagnetic swinging waves in the teaching of the spirit are periodically built up electric and magnetic fields, which are not bound to any matter, but nonetheless include energies and unfold forces which can be of immense might. So this is one of the latent abilities of your spirit form. It, through the Empfinden and the Gemut, uses these swinging waves, and that's why I think human beings at the fourth and fifth level of evolution can do incredible things with their minds. We can even now do this. We can, to a degree. The incredible might of our thoughts, unfortunately, mostly is subconscious and unconscious. But we still, even at that point, we can do incredible things with our mind, and we need to have purposeful thoughts. You need to steer your thoughts because your thoughts are of incredible power. So there's several related German words, Empfinden, Erfühlen, Fühlen, Gefühl. They all talk about feeling. The Empfinden, again, is purely a spiritual process of the Gemüt, and it's not related to the physical body. It's also this fine sensitive feeling that you can get when you are really, really focused, particularly in your thinking about nature. And this helps a lot. Okay. Next term. There's something called a Wesen. Now, human beings are vegan. The higher animals, like dogs and cats and elephants and horses and lions and tigers, etc., bear. A vegan is an independently existing life form with its own individual and personality. So we have our own individuality and personality. The creation, the universal consciousness, doesn't really have a personality. Now, this is hard for us to put our minds around. It's a little bit more like the water in the ocean or a mountain of rocks or gas. The creation is a little different in terms of what kind of life it is. Now, we'll get back to that. We're talking about the vegan right now. So there is an impulse-based, instinct-based, and consciousness-based evolution for the vegan. Animals, they do have intelligence, and they do evolve their intelligence to a degree. When the embryo is in the body of a child, before it has the spirit enter it, it's living as an impulse-based creature. It's not a vegan yet. It has no consciousness of its own and no personality of its own until the 21st day. And then the spirit form comes in. On the 21st day, the embryo is then spiritually animated with the spirit form. The spirit form reincarnates into the embryo along with the consciousness and the personality. So that's a vegan, and your dogs and cats have personalities and they have a spirit form. Now there's something called a vegan heighten, which is a noun. And this is an immaterial or material existence form without a self-determining possibility of evolution. Well, let me try to explain that. The universal consciousness evolves in a set pattern. It's predetermined. It will go step by step. We have a lot of variation in terms of our evolution. We evolve into a physical body for 40 to 60 million years. So you may evolve through 60 million years of evolution in reincarnations in a physical body. Through my own free will, maybe I will choose to or reach my evolutionary goals. I think a lot of this is just natural what happens. But our free will plays a role in our evolution. You can evolve at a faster rate if you so desire, and maybe you don't need that extra 10 or 20 million years of evolution if you really focus on learning. But the vegan heighten doesn't work that way. It evolves without its own self-determining involved in its evolution. An example of that would be the creation of universal consciousness, certain energies, stones, water, and gases. An additional term that's discussed in the Meyer case a bit is called Gewalt. Gewalt is a noun, and it talks about the brutal execution of elemental might and force. It's really something that is hard to even explain in English. It is above violence. It is defined as using with all coercive means that are at one's disposal, physical, psychical, mental, and consciousness powers, abilities, and skills in order to carry out through terrible actions and deeds this execution of elemental might and force. Gewalt is that mostly I would say not a good thing. Another term you'll find in the Meyer teachings is Ur, a German prefix that signifies the earliest, most ancient, initial primeval. Another term, and we're coming to the end of our terms now, is called Asartung, which is can be a noun. It's to get very badly out of control of the good nature, and that happens when you're no longer neutral positive. It happens to all of us, unfortunately. And I talked about the swinging waves. Now, whenever I think about the swinging waves, I often think about the flocks of birds that move, you know, very quickly back and forth, all in unison. I think they're connected by the swinging wave. The same thing happens, I think, in the oceans with the schools of fish. These are electromagnetic swinging waves. In the teaching of the spirit, they are periodically built up electric and magnetic fields. They're not bound to any matter, and they can have forces of immense might. I think we learn how to utilize these at later time periods in our life. Now, Billy's spiritual experiences can be traced all the way back to a time when he was 4 years old. He was living in a town called Niederflux, Switzerland, in the Glatt Valley. At about 3 a.m. one morning on a mild night in May in 1941, he went outside and he sat down on a bench and looked up at a beautiful starry night. He heard a voice in his head that said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." Now, what was happening is Billy was getting impulse. He was getting signals from what is called the storage banks. And there are storage banks associated with our planet, our solar system, with our galaxy, and with our universe. And Billy would hear his own voice say things because he was starting to be influenced by these storage banks, and he would say things like, "Since ancient times you have lived among the stars." And Billy, at this very young age, in 1941, he was 4 years old, he knew who he was and what his mission was on the earth. And all of these good memories penetrated him, and he was showed the way he had to go in his life. And here's something that I've never understood completely. Maybe someday. It says, "Thus I suddenly knew what space and time signify concerning the evolution of human beings and all things." There is a great article called "How It All Began," and I really recommend that you take the time to read this if you ever get a chance. I'll put it in the chat room. I'll try anyway. "How It All Began." And it's a tremendous article. And maybe I'll take a look at just part of this. It's such an interesting thing. On February 3rd of 1941, when I had just turned 4, I lived in Niederflux, 1253, a short distance from the town of Bulak, which was surrounded by Eichenmoser and the Bruder Mountains, as well as by wide forests and extensive meadows and fields. Even then, I felt the urge to learn a lot more and to become knowledgeable and wise, as well as modest, kind, and worthy of life. Through the education of me, mother and father guided me in this direction. However, Pastor Rudolf Zimmermann, the minister of the Reformed Church of the municipality of Bulak, likewise played a weighty role, because in him, quite especially, I saw the expression of knowledge and wisdom, as well as the virtue of modesty, but also his kindness and appreciation in regard to human beings and life. These conditions were the constant motivation for me to contemplate all those values and to develop myself in that direction, which also meant for me, however, that in spite of my young age, I had to learn a lot and that I was not adverse to learning. Nevertheless, I did not completely agree with all that which I had to learn. And the things which were explained and made known to me, thus from a very early age, I learned to maintain my own trains of thought in a controlled manner, to draw my own conclusion and to make my own decisions. Through this, I also learned to separate the wheat from the chaff and to look for the truth where it basically is to be found, namely, in one's own inner and innermost, as well as one's own intellect, in one's own reason, in one's own thoughts, contemplations, and feelings. Billy talks about the importance of independent thinking, because without independent thinking, there is no evolution of the consciousness. And we need to learn to be independent thinkers. Let me talk a little bit about the Might of Our Thoughts again, and I'll read from the Might of Thoughts book. From birth, a human being constantly works on himself and herself, and in fact, either in positive or negative form, whereby the positive must always be seen as a neutral positive equalized. At first, from the point in which one becomes conscious of oneself, one creates oneself by means of oneself, or one destroys oneself. The consciousness is the armory of the thoughts, which might fully come into fruition. But the thoughts are not only indispensable good tools for the forming of facts and deeds, the forming of the morality, the character, the entire personality, the psyche, and all the matters and the conditions and the circumstances. But they are also deadly weapons. Your thoughts are deadly weapons that can be turned against yourself. Let me continue. With which the human being is able to destroy himself or herself. So joy or sorrow are therefore created through the might of your own thoughts. Let me continue here. We were reading how it all began. And Billy's talking about how truth comes from one's own intellect, one's own reason, and one's own thoughts, one's own contemplations and feelings. You know, the feelings are different from emotions. Emotions rage upwards. Feelings grow from the thoughts. And one way, and this is my own observation, take it for what it's worth, is that when I have bad feelings, I most likely trace those back to a bad thought. And that's a good way to check yourself, because I don't think bad feelings come from neutral positive thoughts. But let me continue. From this developed the recognition and the application of self-responsibility, which is a huge thing that the Meyer Information talks about. And I would think that this differentiates itself from most religions. And not to be negative on religions, because I think there are some good things that come from all religions. But it's very interesting that most religions teach dependence on a pastor, or dependence on God, or dependence on a book, but not so much independence, where I think the Meyer teachings teach independence and self-responsibility. Let me continue. And the recognition and fulfillment of responsibility in regard to fellow human beings, the world of plants and animals, and in regard to life and the creational laws and recommendations. One thing that the Meyer material always says is live and help live. And unfortunately, we live in the live and let live world of Earth, which I call the planet of unnecessary death. Just look around you and see all the roadkill. And you'll see how wrong we are and how we're going on such the wrong path in every way. Let me continue. Thus I recognized very soon, and before I even turned 5, that there was very much more to life than that which human beings occupy themselves in everyday existence. And this is one of the big problems, too, is we are such a humongously distracted society. Let me continue with work, which in those days, as a rule, also encroached into one's own free time. Thus, according to my cognition, however, there was still very much more than only the instructive educational moments and the usual learning, which a small earthling just learns in everyday life from peers, parents, grandparents, neighbors, and so on. So I recognize that in spite of my young age, and it's really interesting because I always come back to Billy as a young boy for some reason. I was a human being like every other human being, only that I could not yet fit into the ranks of adults because many years of growing up still separated me from them. Therefore, because of this and other things, I longed to grow up quickly, indeed, in matters pertaining to the consciousness, just as much as in matters pertaining to the body and the age. But quickly, it became clear to me that I could not turn the wheel of time in order for it to run faster. Consequently, I therefore consciously had to practice patience, which also caused me no difficulties. Patience is a very important virtue. And let me read a little bit more, and I'm sorry I'm reading so much tonight. I usually don't read quite so much. I figure you can read for yourself. But I'm enjoying it, so I'm going to continue. And then he starts to describe this amazing mild night in May. It says, well, it happened during a mild night in May in the year 1941. And if I remember rightly, it was around 3 a.m. in the night of Sunday, May 4th. In any case, this is how it has all been etched into my memory. Indeed, because everything which took place at that time was a special experience. I slept and dreamt that I saw my own body lying asleep in the bed. Thinking about it in my sleep, I made the observation that I was really asleep, which somehow amazed me and moved me to wake up deliberately. A little drowsy, I looked out the window through which I saw the clear, starry sky. So I rose from bed and went to the window and climbed out, as it was almost at ground level. Outside, I sat down on the simple bench which stood against the wall of the house which Father had built. And I could not see the moon. However, the sky was clear and wrapped in velvety black, and millions of stars shone down from the firmament. For a few moments, I sat there like that and looked up to the stars while pondering and in my thoughts, flying far into the universe. However, suddenly something peculiar happened inside of me, which from the next moment irrevocably changed my whole life. Strangely touched, I looked at my hands and body and could only vaguely recognize them. So I touched my body and felt it. And then I heard my own voice say, my life is made out of the love of creation. And I could not explain why I said that and which power led me to speak these words. A slight shiver came over me, although the night was quite calm. And then I noticed that I also felt peculiar. Nevertheless, I was not frightened. Again, I looked up to the stars and recognized that the stars were distant suns in the vast outer space, and that those shone by means of their own power, by themselves, even though they were created from the light of the love of creation, as is everything in the whole universe. And again, the words, the origins of which I can never decipher, the sense of which I was, however, able to grasp, as with the first words escaped from my lips, everything is created out of the light of love. And then further words followed. The space between the stars is empty and yet not empty. And everything that exists in the whole universe is a living vision. Everything is creation and creation itself. The words which came from my mouth penetrated deeply into me. And in them I recognize that the true source of life is the light of true creational love, which in its vitality creates all life and contains within itself all laws and recommendations of creational order and all information about life and death. I recognize that the light which the stars emitted was a light in the visible spectrum. However, the light of true love remained invisible and for all great time. And that would be something like an endless eternity, but there's a more specific definition for great time. Something maybe for another day. And indeed, the beaming stars were there, which stirred in me an unfamiliar longing for the vast distance and faraway worlds. Then words suddenly formed on my lips again, which said, "Since ancient times you have lived among the stars," and suddenly I knew who I was and how I am and what my mission is on this earth. And suddenly impulses came from somewhere, which I later recognized as impulses from the storage banks. And many good memories penetrated me and showed me the way I had to go in my life. Thus also I suddenly knew what space and time signify concerning the evolution of human beings and all things, and what the actual meaning of life is, in which the human being must create true love, peace, freedom, knowledge, harmony, and wisdom. And the cognition was awakened that no life or other things at all could exist in the universe if the true being, the creation, did not direct everything with its love as well as its laws and recommendations. And thereby, as I recognized at that time as a little boy, life becomes the power of creation, the highest might, which was created and maintains the universe and everything within it. Again, this is one of Billy's writings. It's called How It All Began. It's tremendously beautiful. It's very poetic and it's very profound. And there's just an incredible amount of information in there. And this is very typical of the Meyer writings. And Billy has written over 40 books and over 2,000 contact reports. And I read a little earlier from the book called How It All Began, which is a very important book indeed, and it talks about the inner personality. We all have an inner personality, a real you. You have a real you, I have a real me. But there's also an artificial personality, a false ego, which struggles against the inner self. The inner self is the true personality, the real, effective ego of the human being. However, this has nothing to do with the personality which is offered and shown outwardly. Because in truth, there is no reflection of the inner self. That which pushes outwardly from the human being is that which he or she would like to be and appear. But this highlights consequences which, as a rule, cannot be brought into harmony with the true ego. Because in its identity, the real I is connected to creation. And therefore, in its form, it is also true to creation. And directed at effectively being human in the real and true sense. But the human being disregards exactly that and clings at any price to a wrong and fateful self-image, which is patched together and is always only makeshift. Through the disregarding of the truthfully inner identity, the human being compels himself or herself into a false and unavoidable delusive self-image, which must always change its kind as a chameleon does with its colors in order to newly adapt itself and change with every situation, so that the fiction of its changeable existence is at least kept alive for a short time, but connected with that is a grasping for the real inner self, for the actual and truly ego, for the actual personality, the nature of the human being. That's another incredible piece of wisdom. And so we have the inner conflict between the true I, the inner personality, and the false ego, which the false ego is really good at creating. It's very cynical, and it seems to lead us into confusion. So beware of your false ego. You have an inner self, which is related to creation. The inner self seems to follow self-responsibility. It seems to have a natural regard for fellow human beings, for the world of plants and animals. So Billy, at a very, very young age, had an exposure to this incredible wisdom. And it was because of this mission that he has here on the earth through these multiple lifetimes. Now, I say Billy, but that's just what we call him in this life. He's been known as Enoch, and these were the names we call these people. These same prophets had different names pronounced differently. Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. These are all previous personalities of the individual that we call Edward Albert Meyer today, or Billy. He has also been the people that we call Socrates, Plato, Mozart, Mendelssohn. He's had lifetimes in the very ancient past as a prophet called Nicodemus. He's lived three lives under the name Henoch. He's been a teacher and a prophet on other worlds and other galaxies. And he's probably the most ignored person, the most ignored contactee in the UFO world, in the whole exopolitical world. It's very strange, very strange situation that we live in. Spock was Billy's first contact. And he would land his strange silvery pear-shaped craft in Bulak, Switzerland. And Spock told Billy that he would have a lot of suffering in his life. And Billy became somewhat of a scapegoat in the village. And he was punished very intensely by his father to the point that he could neither sit nor stand. But Billy persevered, and he was taught by Sloth for something like 11 years. And these contacts were very interesting. One of the things that Spoth did was put a device on Billy's head, which transmitted great knowledge to Billy. And it was really designed to unlock the wisdom that Billy had in his previous personalities. In other times. And another thing that this device did for Billy, which it would protect him against others who would try to force themselves into young Edward's mind. Billy first started out to get telepathic messages from Spock, but later these messages guided Billy to go out and wait for Spock to land his spacecraft, which he did. And Billy was brought up into this ship, and he was taught many things. He was taught about the future. And Billy was told as a young boy that the United States would drop the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and that this would be a very important event on the Earth. And Billy was also taught something called spiritual telepathy. So Billy, as a 4 or 5 year old boy, started to pull information down from the spiritual plane. That's called Arahat Athrasada. That would be another term I could add to my terms. So the teaching that I've just briefly touched on this evening is designed to help all of humanity. And Billy has come to clarify to all human beings this teaching of the truth, which will eventually lead to the raising of all of the humanity that's here on the earth. And I think this is what one thing that Spoth said to Billy. He said, "And what your desire is, what you want to bring to human beings, is unity, peace, concord, knowledge, wisdom, love, freedom, and harmony, and more profound truth, and cognizance that in the entire creational realm, in the entire universe, everything is one and bound together. However, this oneness and connectedness with all things and everything is the result of the might and the immeasurable love of creation, which gives everything selflessly and demands no payment for it. And our biggest problem here on the earth is our ignorance concerning creation and its laws and recommendations." And I think I'll leave it at that this evening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm pretty sure we're going to be on tomorrow afternoon sometime, probably around 3 p.m. I'll talk to you then. Have a good evening.